The following was recorded back in early December, actually the same day that we recorded episode 70 with Christopher Hunter Myers. We recorded this following directly after. This was actually an interview, originally as an interview with Type 1 Radio, was having both me and David on as the guests. And then it just, these guys obviously listened to our show, and it just became a really natural conversation and an extension of what we do on a normal basis. So I asked them if we could release this as another episode of Always Record. They said yes, and here you go. This is it. But I'm here. How is everyone?
Very well.
Okay, hi, how are you?
Hi.
Really good.
Good to go.
Yeah.
Well, great. Someone trying to wrap their mic in brown paper.
Yeah. Sorry, it's me bringing my computer outside. I thought I was muted.
Is it not snowing where you are yet?
Where?
No, where Alan is.
It's really weird. It's actually been incredibly warm the last 2 days. Like, I'm outside in a t-shirt right now.
Yeah.
Train going.
Sounds like the bus is coming. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alan. Yeah. If at any point you're gonna start. Or let me know and I'll bring the computer inside because it's noisy out here.
Okay, yeah.
Alan, may I ask you a direct question?
A direct question? Sure, yeah.
Okay, this is Swami. I was just curious, when is Yogi Gautama's coming?
Well, I just checked UPS tracking about an hour ago. The book proof is going to arrive tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
So, depending on how that looks, we're really aiming. Brandon wants to have it out before Christmas, which is, you know, on a number of levels. But but yeah, so that's really the goal. And basically, I'm getting the proof tomorrow. I'm gonna sit with it for a week, or hopefully less than a week, but. I'll usually have to order a second one. If I make any changes, I'll have to order a second one, but I really think, I think we'll be on target for before Christmas.
Okay, very, very much. I'm just, you know, I was the one who assigned Brandon to write, something based on the Gospel of Thomas in the light of our yogic standings. And, boom, look, a book!
Right. Yeah, it's coming out really, really well. Everyone always underestimates how long it takes to put a book together. So we've been working on this for a long time.
Yeah.
But I'm really happy with
it. I read it in June.
Well, you read the PDF I have, which is not...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, it's not the same, but it's... You know.
But the guts of it are...
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, the guts of it are pretty much the same. It's been added to a lot. It's been, you know, certain things are just changed or expanded upon. Jason, I don't know if you know him, for Sync Book.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. He's really pushed Brandon to kind of explore the ideas a little more in depth, and
It's been a really good process. It's been a long process, but a really good one.
Well, there's a good bit of sync for you. I was just reading his post to David's Venus and Fuzz and Lady Gaga thing. Very good.
Did you watch it?
I haven't watched it yet. No, I've been reading. I just read that thing Jason sent you in regards to you.
Yeah, me and Jason have been definitely corresponding back and forth on our different takes on Lady Gaga. He's more of a Katy Cat. I'm more of a Little Monster. So.
You're more of a... Yeah. did you see his Barry Lyndon satisfaction thing?
What is it?
It's I think it was Darren Brew. Parts that David Bowie had done in movies.
Should we start?
Yeah, start.
Oh, sorry.
Did you see that he put up parts that David Bowie had turned down in movies?
No.
I know exactly what you're talking. Where you're going with this is really funny because
it's really funny.
David and I just did an report, and one of the things that came up was a role that Mick Jagger was supposed to play in a different movie, and it's the fact that Jagger was supposed to be in Barry Lyndon.
Oh, is that why he did that film?
Correct, yeah.
That's really funny, isn't it? Did you get satisfaction, Mr. Lyndon? It just goes, no, it is funny.
Yeah.
I've started recording, by the way, guys, so just so you know, yeah.
Good.
Awesome, okay. I'll be out in a minute. It'll be a lot quieter. Jason had found about, almost a year ago, he had found some articles saying that Mick Jagger was originally considered to be in Barry Lyndon and had turned it down. So it's just a funny sync that we were just talking about that. And the other thing we were...
It was because he didn't want to gather moss. Because he's a Rolling Stone. He felt like he didn't Barry Lyndon, he might gather some moss. I'm sorry.
I'm still struggling to find a way to fit Kate Moss into this, but it's just
not. Oh, no. She doesn't fit into anything. That's the thing. She's so skinny.
Bubbles out. You couldn't even arrest her. The handcuffs won't stay on.
Right.
I'm sorry, officer. Bonk! They hit the floor.
So
nice English accent there, Swami.
One of you had mentioned to me last time I was on Type 1 Radio about Ghostbusters. I don't want to change the subject too much, but I guess that's exactly what I'm doing. So talking about how Sigourney Weaver with the eggs at the beginning next to the Stay Puft bag, how they all break on the table and how you could see it as her... like ovary eggs, you know, and I was really like, I was like, how did I fucking miss that after watching it afterwards? Because it is actually pretty direct.
Do you know what? Sorry, go on.
No, that's go ahead.
You were the one who said it. Yeah. And do you know what? After that, did I mention about how like she goes to the fridge? So there's kind of this element
the
of like the ice box. Okay. Of frigidity there as well. So you've got this kind of frigid woman with her who's uptight and, you know, her eggs are busting open and she doesn't know what to do about it, goddamn. And, but later on in the film, when she's, it's kind of when the Ghostbusters, when she's already been possessed and they're up on the kind of rooftop bit and she kind of is just leaving an embrace with Rick Moranis, who's been possessed as well. So there she is. They've, you know, obviously had this intimate moment, and it's been with this guy that she just has no interest in. But anyway, he's been the one. And then you look up to the... there's kind of this vessel on top of the building, and it's kind of like a cauldron, and it's got like four legs around it, but the way that you look at it as you're looking up at it, it looks like the M that's holding it there. It looks like there's almost like an M, but it looks more like two legs that are sticking out either side. there's the cauldron. And it looks exactly like the album cover that Lady Gaga now has, with, you know, where she has this globe and the legs sticking out the side. It's exactly like this kind of cauldron.
Okay, and, so genius. I totally observed the symbolism of Solomon's Temple above on the building, and that Solomon's Temple, the two pillars, are actually taken by certain older Kabbalists to be women's legs, and that the Holy of Holies is actually, you know, the womb. And so it's actually like, because it's taken to be the Shekinah herself. And so absolutely. And the fact that the two dogs emerge from, you know, you have these two obelisks, which are taken as the pillars. And if you actually zoom in on Lady Gaga's new cover in high def, you can see the two pillars in the reflection on the sphere. And so you have within the sphere, the two pillars represented are then in the film Venus and Furs, the 1995 version, starts out with the two pillars and an eight-pointed star, which is also in the sphere as an eight-pointed star. It begins and ends with these two pillars. And so it is literally Isis unveiled. Is as far as I can tell, the symbolism that she's communicating. And so you have the hidden mystery is the feminine body, whereas the masculine body is the exposed mystery. And so she's literally playing the role of Venus, being that the furs around Venus are literally the veils of Isis. And so you can see this represented in Ghostbusters really directly with the gatekeeper.
Yeah, bear in mind, you're talking about the idea that this is Isis unveiled. So the opening of the ice box or the Isis box, you know, there's a sort of crude pun in there of the box being a vagina, yeah. A term for it. So the opening of Isis's box, and then you have the I love that you mentioned the eggs, because I had never caught that, but definitely the idea that her sort of sexual nature is now unveiled. Very primal impulses are in there. And this, to me, ties directly to the movie Alien, where the poster for that...
Yeah.
The poster is this cracked egg. And the idea of the movie Alien is so overtly sexual, it's really hard to miss. It's, you know, that she's trying to avoid the giant penis and also guard her motherhood. The ship itself is called Mother. Yeah.
It gets impregnated by the alien.
Yeah.
It gets impregnated by the alien, and she destroys it, basically aborts the mission and runs away with her cat.
Her pussy.
There's another. There's another. Yeah.
She saves her pussy.
Away the mouth sense.
Mm.
Yeah, and the both Sigourney Weaver, of course.
Actually,
the mouth extends. It looks like a penis erecting coming out of foreskin. That's exactly where I'm told. That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
In which?
Alien.
Oh yeah, yes, exactly.
It has an internal mouth.
Can we just introduce you, Alan and David, to Thomas Sheridan, who's our Type One presenter with us now.
Sunday night host.
Yeah.
Hi. Wonderful. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Hi guys, I've listened to your stuff before on other shows. Thanks for letting me sit in.
Thank you. Yes, have you with us?
Yeah,
and so this Christmas edition of the Lounge, which we'll be putting out, but a bit further on in the. So Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Well,
Christmas. And Happy Hanukkah as well. Don't forget.
Happy Hanukkah. Yeah. Hanukkah Sameach.
Okay.
Bah, second humbug.
So, the moon card.
Kwanzaa. That one too.
Right.
Kwanzaa, yeah.
So
the main card, David. Yeah,
I'm really into this right now. I've been thinking about it a lot, especially like I've been equating the moon card in tarot with, you have those two towers representing the two pillars and Anubis standing before them in the Crowley deck, and you know, you have the dog and the wolf in the Rider deck. You can see the dogs in Ghostbusters as with the obelisk right there at the head of the building, where you have the gatekeeper. and the Keymaster, the Zaire and the Shekinah,
yeah,
represented in that way, but it's more like a cliphotic version of them or something. But I just love the way that you have
this. It's definitely cliphotic.
Yeah, it's serious.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I'm just quickly saying it's definitely cliphotic because at the end, they actually break the dogs are just shells around Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis.
That's true.
They are literally shells that they have to break out of, or eggs, as you mentioned, the idea of breaking out of the egg.
Right. So you have the Orphic egg represented really directly in relationship to the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, which I believe you could make the argument that the reason why it's Stay Puft has to do with an erection. So, you know, if you get where I'm going with that, and the giant bukkake.
Might be a homosexual
scene.
Reference.
Yeah.
Was the cauldron, was it like a half? Was it open to the top there? Because that would...
It looks almost like it would be something that you would have one of these sort of, like an Olympic flame kind of burning
cauldron.
If it's representing a woman's womb, like cut open, that would be like a cesarean section, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, it's interesting.
So you got this reference, haven't you?
I was born by a cesarean section. You can't really tell, except every time I leave a building, I go out the window.
Cut it out, Swami.
Thomas, you were saying you had a theory about the Marshmallow Man?
Yeah. In the scene, it happens. Bill Murray, who's like the most lackadaisical of the Ghostbusters, happens because it passes his mind. You know, he lacks concentration.
No, it's Dan Aykroyd. It's Dan Aykroyd that thinks about
Dan Aykroyd. I'm sorry. Anyway, I think it represents the dangers of people who are not proficient in esoteric ideas being allowed near.
The irony, of course, being that Ray is the one who owns the esoteric bookshop.
Yeah.
So the character who actually calls on the Marshmallow Man is the one who's most familiar with the occult in that movie.
And even he can make a mistake.
Of course, yeah, absolutely. I think it's showing some of the fallacies there. And the fact that his name is Ray, which is, of course, the king. So this idea of this coming out of his mind. So
the marshmallow is the son of the king.
Losing focus.
Yeah. I think definitely there is... You know, this is interesting because I've actually explored Ghostbusters 2. Ghostbusters 2 is overt in its use of sexual psycho-spiritual energy. Now, I never realized the first one does the same. As David points out, you have the Stay Puft is almost like the idea of an erection. And when what do they have to do? They cross the streams. It's this very sort of phallic, almost circle jerk. And then this white cream explodes all over the city. Now, if you're, you want to go into any kind of tantra, the idea is that you're not actually supposed to ejaculate, right? You want the kundalini to continue to rise. You want to keep that sacred sexual fluid inside. Well, if you look at Ghostbusters 2, they do something which is so incredibly overt, is that they go up to the Statue of Liberty, which is Isis, and then Bill Murray says, "I wonder what she looked like under that toga," is the idea of Isis unveiled, right? He wants to see what Isis looks like under the veil.
Yeah.
Then they go inside, and they have this goo that they shoot all over Isis to energize and sort of activate her into movement, and it really is this strange sort of sexual fluid. I don't think it's just reading into it that much. I think this is pretty explicit. I just never realized that it was also in the first one with this same idea and
In that scene as well, Bill Murray refers to her to say, "Oh, she's tough. She's a harbor chick." means he's
yeah.
Yeah, totally. And that, you know, you have the goo is responding to people's anger and it bubbles up with anger. You could make the argument that it's the sacral Mars center is what that goo represents, and yeah, that they're directing the goo towards a higher aim.
We should get Darren Diogi on talking about goo.
Also,
we've got enough minds on here.
In both those films, they seem to kind of link together in some way as well. There's kind of a parallel going on, because in the first film, I noticed that at the very beginning, Bill Murray, when they're in the library, he gets slimed by the little creature, and he looks, it kind of reminded me of like a newborn baby, and he's lying on the floor kind of moving in a weird kind of way, and he's just covered in this goo, and he's just like, oh, I feel so funky, I think he says. And then in Ghostbusters 2, he just to get out of going on this trip that they're going to do underground, because he's on a date with Sigourney Weaver, and he's shall I go? Hey, the guys want me to go and go down in the sewers and check this thing out. Do you mind? And she's like, no, you're coming with me on a date. And he's like, sorry, guys, got to go. So he gets out of that one. But the other guys go down they make their way through this. They have to dig a hole. They have to get through the hymen almost.
Uh-huh.
So they dig this hole and they go underground and they discover the river of goo, and they end up falling in or getting covered in it. And they all climb out through a what do they call them in America? Well, a manhole. Yeah. You know, a manhole cover.
A manhole.
A manhole.
And not a womanhole. It's
this kind of birthing thing where they come out. All of them are completely slimed and they come out. So there's a kind of birthing thing going on for Dan Aykroyd and Egon and Winston. Yeah, so they kind of go through a birthing process in the second film.
That's right, because they're angry at first, and then they all start hugging each other, don't they? Guys, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Yeah, they have
it's
to
the slime that's making us do it.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, this slime reacts to both very positive emotions and negative.
Yeah.
Right, so it's not inherently good or bad. It's just sort of enhancing whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I just
enhancing whatever the intent is that's already existing.
Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah.
It's also that.
So
you're,
I just want to.
Yeah. Go ahead.
If I could just take 1 minute, I just want to explain. Ghostbusters has been a really big touchstone for me because of there's so much that infers to 9/11 in there, and specifically, like in the first movie, there when Winston and Ray, they're driving over the Brooklyn Bridge and they're having a conversation about the end of the world and Judgment Day, and Winston is talking about the sixth seal of the Book of Revelation.
Yes.
And then it pans from that to the World Trade Center. Now you have the World Trade Center ostensibly being brought down by Osama bin Laden, who is then himself brought down by SEAL Team 6. So you have the sixth seal and the World Trade Center in that shot being together, I think is pretty profound. And the fact that you talk about this idea of a birthing process, I think one of the most profound things that I've found is that you look at an aerial view of Manhattan on September 11th, there's a bunch of satellite shots, and Manhattan I have explored as representing the severed phallus of Osiris. And if you look on 9/11, the World Trade Center is at the southernmost end of Manhattan. It would be the tip of Venus, and there's this white cloud billowing out, and it's billowing out onto the Statue of Liberty, which is Isis. So here you have Osiris essentially impregnating Isis. And then I explored this idea for a while before I actually looked into the astrology of the moment. And if you look at the Egyptian constellation for Horus, which is their child, it is rising directly above New York City, and it just in the moments leading up to, and then you have the towers fall, the cloud billows all over Isis, and then minutes, Horus reaches this apex or the zenith point over New York City. So you essentially have the child being born in that event.
And that sort of relates to what Steve was saying about Jesus being born on 9/11.
You know, Manhattan was crafted to look like a phallus or a book. The island is not naturally that shape. It was actually, the engine was actually done such a way, I'm convinced, to make it look like incredibly like a phallus from the air. You even look at the way the Bronx, at the top of it, it looks like the testicles. And it
absolutely
looks like it's impregnating the whole, you know, Hudson River estuary. And it looks like a bit. And the ocean looks like a bear canal at the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. It's really bizarre. I'm so glad you mentioned that. You're the first person that I've ever heard mention that, and it's something I've always thought was like weird thinking it. But when I saw the photographs of 9/11 from above, it looked like the penis of Manhattan was ejaculating into New York Bay.
Huh.
I mean, I'm so glad you noticed the Bronx. Really, basically what you have to do is if you take the map of New York City and you kind of turn it upside down or on its side, the whole thing becomes much more obvious. And this happened literally by me taking a subway map. I mean, I grew up in New York City. I lived there for 2 years.
That's how I did it as well.
Yeah, and I just one day, I had this map and I sort of was looking at something or put it down and I happened to glance over it upside down. And I'm like, oh, wait a second. And this whole thing made sense because even in New York slang, they refer to the Bronx as the boogie down Bronx, like down as in it's at the bottom. Even though it's the northernmost, it's actually at the bottom. So you have the idea of testicles, penis. Bear in mind, Staten Island what we do is we call them by county names. So there's like their sort of official names, but there's also like
Richmond
their
County.
Real name. So Richmond is like the capstone. It is the rich mound. It is the capstone. So the idea that this and what Staten Island has on it is there's not a lot there really. There's nothing exciting to really talk about on Staten Island, except it's really well known as it has a really big hill with one of the biggest lighthouses at the top of it. So you have this mound with this glowing light at the top. And what are the other two counties that we're missing are the Queens and Brooklyn. And Brooklyn's official name is Kings County. So you have the King and the Queen, plus Osiris and then this Isis being right in it is the statue right in front of Isis. And the other thing to sort of note, if you're really going to go into this, I originally thought of this, is that there are five counties or five boroughs, and there are five points on a pyramid. So you have, I would have assumed at first, when I first thought this, that Manhattan would be the capstone, but I actually realized it's Staten Island. And what happens is Staten Island, what's famous to do in New York is take the Staten Island Ferry. There's no bridge that connects Staten Island and Manhattan. Instead, you have to take a boat. So you have this boat, and bear in mind, like, the boats are named after. There's a JFK. It's like really funny, you know, like there are these things. And you take this boat, and it goes from the tip of Manhattan, or Osiris's phallus, takes you past Statue of Liberty or Isis, and then it pulls into a what's called St. George Ferry Terminal. Something I put on my blog, a year or two ago, was putting two images side by side. St. George, you guys are English, you know, is this guy who theoretically attacked the dragon and slayed the dragon, right?
Apollo version, yeah.
But you can look at an version, you can actually see Horus battling Set or Sobek. And I put these two, I put this Egyptian stone carving next to a European medieval version of St. George battling the dragon. And you see that it is literally the exact same image. Mm-hmm. So when you realize that St. George is a sort of modern day version of Horus, you realize that this it takes you from the tip of Osiris's phallus past Isis into a place named after Horus.
Oh, wow.
Wow. The 5 points out of 5 points in pentagram two, and there's even a 5 points in Lower Manhattan.
There's a direct Kabbalistic reference in Ghostbusters in that scene where he's talking about the dead rising from the grave. That has huge significance, being that that is actually, they say it in the book of Revelations, but that's taken from the book of Isaiah, where there's a verse about the dead rising from the graves, which is a Kabbalistic code where if you spell out Tetragrammaton using Alephs, so if you spell Hey, Aleph, or Yud Hey, Vav Hey, so if you spell it out using Alephs, and you leave out the final Hey, you get, I believe it's, what is it? I need my book with me, but there's a code where the Hebrew word for do equals, what is this? I'm not doing this justice. Basically, you have it equaling Tetragrammaton minus the final hey. And so the word ma, which equals 45, which is the same value of Adam, if you add them all together, you get, I'm not doing this right. I'm sorry, guys. I wish I had my stuff with me.
Can I just say one thing that happened? That's another thing that people miss out on, following on from the phallus thing. The South Ferry Terminal, that I used to live in Manhattan for years as well, New York for years. The South Ferry Terminal, where the Staten Island Ferry leads from, is right beside the Customs House, which is the very end of Broadway. Broadway travels right up the center of Manhattan, and the only other borough it goes into is it crosses over into the Bronx, and that's like the Seminole Canal. It's the Seminole Canal from the testes all the way down to the tip of the penis. I mean, it's so obvious. There's no way that could be an accident. No way. You couldn't, you know, I remember when I first started looking at that, I was saying, am I on some kind of Freudian role here? Am I seeing too much? But it's not. Mm-hmm. It really is like that. And when you see how the civil engineering was done around the World Trade Center, they even extended the top of Lower Manhattan so it would be even more like a penis. And that was the spill removed from the destruction of the World Trade Center.
And do you know what that area at the very northernmost part of Manhattan, which reaches into the Bronx, is called?
Inwood.
Well, Spouts. Right. There's,
oh, there's, you mean the water there, Spouting Devil, the Spouting Devil.
There's there is Inwood.
Oh, where the crash was.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That plane crash. There is Inwood, which is of course another phallic pun. But there's also the area is called Dykeman or Dykeman.
Dykeman, yeah.
I actually had the same reaction as you. Is like, am I seeing phalluses everywhere? Like, is this? Am I reading into this? And it's the fact that I really don't think it is the case, because there's a few things I want to point out. One, just to mention the Ghostbusters. In Ghostbusters, Bill Murray makes the joke to the politician that he calls him dickless.
That's what I was saying to David last time. Yeah. The Osiris reference. Yeah.
Yeah, it's explicit. He says, oh, you didn't know he has no dick? Well, who is it that has no dick? It's Osiris.
Right.
There's something else here. If you, one of the clues for me is that, what is one of the famous things about Manhattan being Central Park, this big green section in the center.
Yeah.
So obviously Osiris being the green man. But if you actually look at the proportions of Central Park, you'll notice a few things. So you have avenues are what we do from east to west, and then you have streets is what we do from, you know, north to south or south north. So Central Park is 3 avenues wide, and it is 51 streets tall. Now, Osiris dies, according to Plutarch. The ancient Egyptians celebrated the death of Osiris on the 17th day of the third month. So 3 times 17 is 51.
So the fact that you have 3 by 51, what is implying is the inherent 17. Like if you were to divide that 51 by 3, you get the 17 coding this Osiris into Central Park.
Wow. Brilliant. So,
I was just going to say that I always see the Statham guy I mean, it's like a giant baby as this kind of Horus resonating kind of he's the angry child, you know. He wants vengeance.
What kind of hat is he wearing? What kind of hat is he wearing?
The sailor's hat.
He's a seaman. He's a seaman.
But also,
Rick Moran resonates this kind of huge baby thing as well in Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Totally.
Huge.
The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is very camp when you look at his photograph, the way the sailor hat is on the side. So there's obviously a sort of a repressed homoeroticism going on in that whole image too.
So I ran out and I grabbed my notes. So it's actually a verse from
Stay Puft.
It's Isaiah 26:19. It says, "Oh, let your dead revive, let corpses arise, awake and shout for joy. You will dwell in the dust, for your dew is the dew of light. You make the land of the shadows come to life," is literally the verse. And so the explanation is that you have, if you spell out Yud Hey Vav with Aleph, you get the value of 39. Now, if you add, so 39 literally means is the gematrical value of the word for dew. So where it says, for your dew is the dew of light. If you then add, so you have the male, right, with Yud Hey Vav, Yud is the male, and then it's minus the female as the Shatina. Now, if you add the final Hey, then you get the value of Adam, which is literally Aleph in blood. It's spirit in blood. So that you have it's you put the male with the female, and then you get the full tetragrammaton. Very symbolic, meaning that to revive the dead is to complete the tetragrammaton, and that it's the dew is the key to that. And so that's represented in Ghostbusters when they're letting you know how the reviving of the dead, the ghosts, connects to the completion of the temple, which is what you see at the top of the building. A little complicated, but I feel like there's a good argument for it.
Well, Dan Aykroyd does say you see a disaster on biblical proportions, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, it's totally, that's the prophecy. So in the book of Revelations, they're actually referencing this verse from Isaiah. And so then that's represented in the film really directly. Pretty trippy.
Yeah, very.
So do you think that with all the symbol around New York, it may be a reason why there's so many films that are set in New York to encode the people watching them with these in a subliminal fashion?
I watched the two King Kong films. I'm sending you the posters for them now. Check them out.
I just watched
their boat versions of King Kong movies. They're totally symbolic, just like Ghostbusters is, in terms of New York as a necessary gateway.
Well, King Kong is the epitome of it.
Well, King Kong, Alan's got loads of great stuff on King Kong.
No, go ahead, David, because I think you're going to say what I was, a similar
there, isn't it?
Well, King Kong doesn't mess around with the overt Kabbalism. So the fact that he climbs the Empire State Building to its tip and dies at its tip is pretty obvious, like what they're portraying, because he's holding beauty in his hand. So it's like, it's not the airplanes that killed the beast, it was beauty. And then the beast is literally Tiferet, and because it's the sun on the tree of life. And so, and then it's beauty as well as the beast. It's got these two sides to it. And so,
and the fact that it's even air, so maybe you want to speak to the idea that it's an airplane. So you have the intellectual plane versus the beauty being Tiferet or the heart.
Yes. And so, like, you know.
And in the remake, he goes down Broadway and gets on top of the World Trade Center. set the 1970s remake.
The Jessica Lange, Jessica Tani.
Yeah.
Empire is literally the definition of Malkuth. And so the Shekhinah is Empire, as you know, this other side. And so you can see, first of all, New York is Oz. That's one letter removed from Oz. You can see, you know, that's representative of the pillars, which is represented as the two towers, because the two pillars of Solomon's temple literally translate Yachin and Boaz is established in strength or established in Oz. That's what Boaz means. And so, it's all very direct.
And then
you make the points about Kong being in Japanese or something. And
It's Chinese,
falls,
yes.
Chinese, and Kong, he falls down to ground zero.
Correct, yes. Kong is zero. He falls to ground zero. If you look on in the tarot, zero is the fool falling off the cliff. Right? So you have Kong stepping off this cliff. I would also point you to there was a movie, the Super Mario Brothers movie, which shows the World Trade Center being destroyed. I don't know if you could probably just a quick Google search.
Well, posted.
Very famous thing where they travel from one world to the other and they see the Twin Towers. They go to the other world, suddenly you see the towers being destroyed. It looks very much like 9/11. And in the alternate reality, New York, the Twin Towers each have a letter K on them for King Koopa. This is his headquarters is out of there, but it's putting KK.
11,
now,
11.
What is K?
11, yeah.
Yes, the 11th letter. Even the number 11 is in itself two pillars. So you have 11-11, the 11-11 phenomena. There, Anthony Peake telling me that in, I think it's Danish or something, that one of his book titles, where it was called, you know, Is There Life After Death? They translated it as 11-11. Apparently, I think in Danish, that means life after life.
Yeah, I remember him saying that.
So, I just got to drop this here. So, Lady Gaga's most recent album, Art Pop, actually, if you zoom in on the ball, like the spherical looking thing, up real close, you can see the two pillars that are then represented in Venus and Furs. The album came out on 11-11. And so 11-11, and then it includes the two pillars, its emphasis on that, and you can see like the classic image of Isis where it says, no man hath unveiled me. It has the two pillars on both sides of her with the veil. You can see what's being communicated. Also that her big song on that is I Live for the Applause, which if you watch when she did that presentation, when her first demonstration of the song, it takes place in Oz, and she follows the Yellow Brick Road in New York City. This happens, and then she has the apple at the end that's handed, and so you can see she's equating the apple and Oz very blatantly, and then that's the joke or the meaning of I Live for the Applause, I Live for the Apple of Oz.
My man, do you realize that I put in a link into the chat, and I for anyone who's listening along, I invite you to look at allthehappycreatures.blogspot.com from June 2012. There's an archive on the side, June 2012. It's called Great Gig in the Sky, Part 4, The Age of Apocalypse. And you're going to find images for a lot of the things that we've talked about. And one of the things that I'm relating this to is the idea that New York is the Big Apple, right? But there's also this idea of Glastonbury. For you Brits, you have Glastonbury where King Arthur is said to be buried. This is, again, the once and future king, the Osiris, the dead rising from the grave, all this stuff, the king who born and died, what I've been referring to as a king kill or KK. And there's the fact that another name for Glastonbury is Avalon. And the word Avalon, if you look into the etymology of Avalon, it was the island of apples. So you have New York City being the big apple. It sort of makes it the modern day Avalon.
And you know how the Big Apple, why it's called the Big Apple, right? It's a direct reference to Kansas. So the oldest place where they've found where New York is called the Big Apple, they say that the country's sap has all gone to New York, and that somebody in Kansas would relate to New York as the Big Apple because the sap from the tree has made its apple the largest. And so it all has to do with them having the most money in New York. So when you watch The Wizard of Oz and she says, we're not in Kansas anymore, she's literally referring to New York City as the Big Apple. So that's...
And it is quite bright lights, isn't it, Oz? The big shiny place.
It's all color.
Yeah. Emerald City? Well, there
New
you
Year's
go.
Eve.
Yeah. So green, the green, because they don't they call it the Emerald City?
And it was,
well, it's supposed to follow the gold, isn't it?
Mm.
As soon as she gets into...
Hey, I heard an interesting thing that Frank Baum actually came up with that, because you know you've discussed before that following the Yellow Brick Road means to stay in the gold standard and don't go to the green
right.
for the money. So that there's the first way and the second way, and apparently Frank Baum came to that decision for using Oz, the bookkeeper, and they had to N and then O to Z, so the first way and the second way.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's like the second half of the alphabet.
Second half of the alphabet, because he was in his file keeping sort of set. It was like A to N and then O to Z. So is the gold standard where you should stay on, and the way is the wrong way, you know, look behind the curtain kind of deal.
You do realize that if you take the letter A and a lowercase N,
yeah,
and flip the, what is the symbol for gold is A
N A U. Whoa.
Right.
Yeah.
Just flip that N and into a U.
Huh. And then you know if you lay the alphabet against itself backwards, which is a common practice for Kabbalists to do with the Hebrew language. If you do that with English, O and Z are directly across from A and L. So you have L.A. is like the opposite of New York, but then you have Lieber Al, which is L. It's a name for God. And so you can see that, you know, Lieber Al, the book of the law, directly relates in that sense, being that the who's behind the curtain... But Iowa's, which
that's
is
Hollywood.
once again Oz. That's what the word is. So it's the strength. So you can see the correlation of who's behind the curtain, but this intelligence of Iowa's. It's pretty trippy.
Yeah. Hey.
So what? Do you fancy talking about sync events? Because the first time I ever spoke to Alan was the synchronistic event in the Mystic City. And you've recently just done the Bay Area one.
Yes.
Summit.
And that was absolutely fabulous to hear that audio of the, you know, the
it day. It transported me there.
It was fantastic. And also the follow-up show on 42 Minutes with Joe Alexander. It's just, you know... guys buzzing about all meeting up and doing, and I was particularly interested, Alan, about your because I too am a big Tom Waits fan, and I actually got same thing, somebody left a tape in my possession, and it was Rain Dogs, and it was Rain Dogs, it wasn't Frank's Wild Years, but Frank's Wild Years.
Rain Dogs is another one.
Yeah, well, Frank's Wild Years came out about 2 weeks later after I first heard Rain Dog. So it was like, wow. And the guy whose tape it was, I assumed that he'd bought a ticket to see his show, which was the Big Time Show. Remember that, that movie came out?
Uh-huh.
And he never saw it, and I didn't. It was a bit of a, oh, sorry, mate. But that was amazing. And I actually listened to you talk about that and Synchronized, the last Synchronized you've done. I'd actually just watched a film of that concert at the bridge that somebody got on the car on YouTube. So it was like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, man. It was like wicked. And also, I'm a big, huge Neil Young fan.
Awesome.
You know, so
there's something really interesting there with, you know, even like Neil Young, his initials being NY.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pun in his last name, we talk about Carl Jung, who coined the term synchronicity. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just some really interesting little
notes, and then you could take it really practical. Man, I really love that music.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Well, there's a guy who's just followed the path of the light, hasn't he, basically? He only records in new moon cycles, doesn't he? And he's one of the few out of that whole canyon scene that actually kind of broke away from it all and sort of doesn't seem to have any weird military connections that so many of them do have.
Sure.
Yeah, and funnily enough, he comes from, well, he doesn't come from Winnipeg, but he moved there when he was very young.
Yeah.
And he's that album, The Middle of Nowhere, or This Is Nowhere, is about Winnipeg.
Do you know, there's an interesting little esoteric side here, is that Neil Young, so he has the song Heart of Gold was his big hit, right? His most famous, like, commercial song.
Yeah.
And he says, being a miner for a heart of gold. And to me, this speaks directly to the ideas of alchemy, where you're looking to turn your heart into a heart of gold.
Yeah. Well, very much. Well, what was the album before that? It was After the Gold Rush, wasn't it? So,
correct, yeah. So he has this through on. He also has an album, Silver and Gold. Oh, no, sorry, it's a song. Is that the name of the
album? It's the name of the album, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like in the early 2000s, he put out a Silver and Gold album.
Yeah.
But what's funny is, you know, he had the album Rust Never Sleeps. Well, Neil Young did a tour last year, and he incorporated elements from the Rust Never Sleeps concert series.
Yeah, I've seen.
And in it, he called this tour Alchemy Never Works.
I love that.
Oh.
And when I was talking to my friend about it, it was like, well, why would alchemy never work? And the reason why alchemy would never work is because rust never sleeps. You keep trying to improve yourself, but the rust keeps creeping in. You know, something like that. But I was in the middle of the concert, I was watching it, and I turned to my wife, and I'm like, I feel like there's this concept, a weird unspoken concept that they're trying to show of time travel, that they're turning time backwards in the middle of this concert. And at some point, I can't put my finger on it, but there's this unspoken thing in the way they're acting and the way they're doing something. I'm getting this impression. And he then, toward the end of the show, says, like, all right, let's turn the clock back or something. And they play this audio clip of his, like, one song from each decade kind of going through his catalog. It was like a pre-recorded thing, as in, like, turning time around and turning it back forward again and this whole thing. And I don't know exactly what to make of that. I just...
it's probably a market employer, because his thing's called Archives at the moment, isn't it? Where he's releasing all the old recordings he made.
Sure, yeah, but there was definitely
But still, for that to show up, you're considering this possibility, and then for that particular produced element.
Also, you were saying, you know, the miner for a heart of gold. Now, a miner could be a child, and so turning back the clock and going back.
Into
a miner. Ooh, that's good. You guys, just to take it back to Ghostbusters really quickly, you know, everyone points out how much fucking smoking is in Ghostbusters and how the symbol for the Ghostbusters itself is like the crossed out smoke, you know? I'm hearing my voice.
Yes, yes, yes.
But you know, like when they do this, they get rid of Slimer and they go, "We came, we saw, we kicked its ass." That is a reference to, on a pack of Marlboro cigarettes, it says, I just said this actually with our last the show we just did, but that Vinny Vidi Dirci, or maybe strike that reverse, I forget how it goes, but it's a quote from Caesar where he says, "We came, we saw, we conquered." And so it's literally like, why do you see so many fucking pyramids on packs of cigarettes, including Marlboro, which is when you look at the outline of the red and Camel and the pyramid structure, and then how, if you look at the cigarette itself, I mean, they're obviously playing on the phallus it's an oral fixation, you know, and how it's kind of taking advantage of like the Freudian idea of us being promorphously perverse from when you're a child, that you're actually like completely sexual, and that sexuality doesn't begin at puberty. And so you could argue that the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is actually representative of us being promorphously perverse, and how to cross the streams is literally, instead of it being sublimation where we're compartmentalizing our spirituality as something separate from our sexuality, is actually to unite the spiritual with the sexual in order to transcend.
So crossing the streams being like uniting the two outer pillars into the inner pillar.
Exactly.
Because I was thinking of a pack of Marlboro. I think it's Freeman. Freeman has talked about the idea that on a pack of camel sets, you see a pyramid, then a camel in the center, and then another pyramid, as if the camel being the center of the pillar. But
there's also a man in there as well, isn't there? There's a man in the leg.
A man in the leg?
Yeah. I don't know whether it's in the new, the later one, but in the old camel packet, the front leg or the back leg there was actually a man.
Yeah, subliminal, and I believe it's actually a reference to Gimel, and that's why a camel is called camel in the first place.
He's the G as well, then.
Because the the Hebrew letter Gimel, which means camel, before it was Gimel, actually as a pictograph, was a killing stick, a stick that's used to kill. And so
as a cigarette, yeah.
Yeah, like for real. Like I actually consider that that's most likely the explanation of why it's camel in the first place. And so it's also the high priestess, which is Isis, is Gimel. And so when you're watching Ghostbusters at the end, where you have that pyramid on top of that building with the two pillars, that they're actually emphasizing the subliminal advertising of tobacco. Also the fact that tobacco is used for Native Americans to be protection in the land of the dead. And so you kind of have the symbolism being played out with that. They're saying that the dead are rising from the graves, that, you know, we're saying anti-smoking, but at the same time, I don't know, it's hard to communicate, but it feels like all the elements are there for a reason.
When they're at the top of the tower there, and the Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis characters have, you know, had their nuptial agreement, and everyone's on the top of the building, and I was kind of interpreting this as being the point of conception, and the kind. It comes, the creature or whatever, this woman comes down, but she's almost... Zul?
Yeah.
Zul,
that's it. Yeah, she comes down and she's almost androgynous in a way, even though you can see she has breasts, but she's a bit of an androgynous sort of figure, and she asks them to choose. And I felt like this is kind of the moment in the womb of conception where, you know, it chooses what's it going to be, a boy or a girl or whatever, and then
both to start.
Yeah, it's both to start with. Yeah, and then that's when we get the Horus thing turning up. This is when Ray makes the decision. He makes the choice.
Right.
You know, you just made me realize what's actually happening there. I never really thought of Zool before, but so you know that they're on, when they go onto the top, they're on the 22nd floor, right? 22. There are 22 Hebrew letters, 22 paths on the tree, there are 22 trumps of the tarot, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. But what they look out on, it looks like she's descended from an eye in a pyramid, the Eye of Providence.
Yeah.
Right? It very much looks like that. But what would this be is the Eye of Light. Sorry, I'm getting crazy echo here.
Yeah.
There's like a descending out of this eye, the pyramid, or the Eye of Light. But, and Horus, of course, being light, and Lucifer being the light bringer, all these different things that we could want to put. Remind me about that later. But But basically, the name Zool, so Zool is the reverse of lose, L-U-Z, right? Or it's like this idea of the sort of reverse of the light, and that Ray, she passes through Ray, like Ray being a ray of light, and she's sort of the Latin light reversed. If you L-U-X, light, if you sort of reverse that and pronounced it, it would sort of sound like Zool.
Wow, that's amazing, yeah, because actually Ray actually knows he's going to choose as well, because he says, I couldn't help it, so I thought of the most friendliest thing that I could think of at the time, and Mr. Staypuff never hurt anyone.
Right.
Amazing.
Wow. So it's almost as if they've gone from what they're on the Clefotic side of the tree, right? That everything's reversed. Instead of the light coming from the pyramid, they're getting the darkness. Choose your destruction.
Yeah.
And they almost have to sort of turn that around.
Well,
and that's literally represented by when they do so, the shells break off.
Mm. Yeah, that's actually a deep Kabbalistic concept that starts out in, you know, from the book of Genesis, where it's like in the beginning, and then you have the sun is created after the first light, so that any light that's of the sun is not the light of Ein Sof. So you have the original light, and then the kind of like the light that stands before that as a substitute, which we get to Keter, and which we call illumination, which is the basis of the Illuminati, right? But then it's that there that you don't stop there, that there's a light beyond the light of enlightenment, basically, that we're still falling short even at enlightenment, which is a concept in the Yoga Sutras that's emphasized, is that you don't stop at the highest, what we would consider relatively to be our highest level, and that if you stop there, you're in a non-dual state, but there's something else beyond that. Kind of interesting.
Which cannot be processed by the senses or the mind.
Exactly.
Must be outside of everything which appears within the senses and the mind. Establish your stability outside of that, and then you find that all things that are visible or processable in the senses and the mind are then within you.
Right.
Which is
you just have to get all of that in order to individuate and play the role of this individuation, which has forgotten the unity, in order to explore all the various possibilities.
Well said.
Swami, do you think that's why when Zool asked them to choose the form of their destroyer, the only way for them to not do that, they say, don't think of anything, clear your mind, don't think of anything, because the moment you're still in your mind, then it gives it form, it gives form to the destruction.
And that's when the marshmallow appeared.
Right, exactly.
Which is a false god.
You're still there.
You know, if I can, you know, being the yoga representative here, being a swami of a lineage of enlightened masters, yoga, the word yoga, comes from the Sanskrit term yuj, to yoke, which means take the duality and then make it one. The one became the many for the sport of seeing the many could figure out they are the one again.
Right.
And this is the process. From world cycle, world cycle, world cycle. And all potential, all possibilities must be explored. And in those individuations, we each get the opportunity to turn in whatever direction we choose. Play the game any way you wish, because from the source level, it's all going to be put back in the box. At the end of the world cycle, everything's safe, warm and fuzzy, back home. But during the game, there is the drama of duality and the variety of thought and possibility, good guys, bad guys, you know, all this maya, the illusory temporary nature of the apparent separation, which it is our job, our dharma, to find our way back home again.
Home again, home again. That's the sailor's way.
I don't know. And it don't matter how you get there, right? Bicycle.
So Mr. Stapoff again.
Crawl on your knees. Doesn't matter which path. They all go to the top of the mountain eventually. Some are very difficult. Some are very direct. But play it any way you wish, because you have the freedom to do so. And the one, which is beyond any structure of senses, mind, being knows everything's all well, no problem. It's the drama playing out, and it will continue to do that cycle after cycle after cycle, just the same as Thomas and I were to sit down at a table, pull out a chessboard, set up our pieces, and then play a game of chess. The pieces themselves have no power in and of themselves until we begin the game. And once the game is going, there are rules in effect which govern the movement of the pieces and how the game is played. And when the game is finished, someone has won, someone has lost. But at the end, all the pieces, from the king to the very first pawn moved, are laid back on their side, put back in the box, put away until time for the next game.
And that's what happens in Ghostbusters, isn't it? Because these manifestations get someone's consciousness transported into them, you know, whether it be the thought of the Marshmallow Man. You know, that's like a tulpa created, and then the boy, the big scary child, and the Statue of Liberty, they're all given the animatedness, aren't they?
You know, the absolute where thought goes.
Sonic, consider what you just said, because the idea Zool offering them a choice. And it's between light and darkness, between enlightenment or destruction. And in the first one, they are unconscious of how they animate things. So what they don't bring forth destroys them. And in the second one, what they do bring forth, what is inside of them, and it enlightens them.
So by the second one, they become Jedis.
Practically.
That's the gospel of... That's the gospel of Thomas, right? The idea of if you don't bring forth what is in you, it will destroy you. So yeah. When he's unconscious of it, he brings about his destruction. By the time of the second one, now they know how to animate and control their projection. I want to consider here for a moment that the Statue of Liberty, Thomas and I were talking about the esoteric inherent nature of Manhattan and New York City. I want you to realize that the Statue of Liberty is actually made of copper, right? So copper is the metal that's associated with Venus or Lucifer, right? That being the same thing. So here we have, even though she's a statue of Isis, she's a statue of Venus, literally a light bringer, because she used to be a light tower. Now, of course, time copper turned green. So here again, we have the idea of green man and green woman. But the other thing I want you to consider is that, Thomas, you might get this reference. What is the part of Manhattan just south of World Trade Center, in between the World Trade and Statue of Liberty, is called Battery Park.
Yeah.
Now, she is the copper top battery. She's literally a piece of copper sitting in a saltwater bath of the harbor with a light. She is a battery, a power source.
And isn't she facing away from New York?
She's facing towards Brooklyn.
Right, okay.
She has her back to America. interesting enough. Right. Like Manhattan, and only the Bronx is the only borough of New York that's actually on the mainland United States. She has her back to New Jersey, facing towards like Brooklyn, that direction. She's literally looking into New York Harbor crossways.
Right, because what she's doing is she's, you could say she has her back to America. That's actually a pretty profound point. But I think the idea is that she's there to welcome the people coming in across the ocean, right? It's probably the conscious intent is to have her, when you come into America, she's the first thing you see. So she's greeting those coming in, but in doing so has her back to America. It's interesting.
Hey,
there's also, well, wasn't she also, speaking of back to, wasn't she also initially supposed to be at the mouth of the Suez Canal and it fell through? So she ended up being sent to America. So she would have had her back to Africa as well, her back to Egypt.
Interesting.
I'm pretty sure it was originally designed to go at the entrance to the Suez Canal.
Well, aren't there about five of them around the place?
Hey,
it's interesting that you had mentioned
Egypt.
That's
another interesting one, Egypt and everything.
Yeah, but at the same time, so there is, Statue of Liberty is actually facing, if you go into Brooklyn, there is a statue of Athena in Brooklyn that is facing the Statue of Liberty. So the two statues are facing each other, so the two goddesses are facing each other, but Scott Amstott has pointed out that there is, at the base of the Statue of Liberty, there's one extended pier that comes off, like a platform that comes off, right, where you would land. Yeah. And if you draw a straight line from that pier, it actually points to Mecca. It points to the Kaaba stone at Mecca.
Well, that line goes straight through stone, just Paris.
Oh, right, right.
Say that again?
In the Scott Onstott film, he says a straight line that through the thing you just mentioned, that pier, that goes through Egypt, through Paris, through London, or through Stonehenge, and then straight over to the Liberty, and then on to where the United Nations building are.
And it goes through Boston and around there, doesn't it? Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's where we did. Remember, I did the meditation flash mob for your mind conference. We did it on the PowerPoint, where six lines come together. One of them going back to Stonehenge, and so I mean that's the same line. That's where we did the.
And why is the Statue of Liberty on a pentagram as well?
It's on an 11-pointed star or 8-point. Yeah. It's 11.
An 11.
Yeah.
It's on the same pointed star. Because that's on the star card of the tarot, I think, whatever that is, 8.
Is it an 8-pointed star at her base? If it's an 8-pointed star.
She has 11, like, it's either
11, 7, well, there you go, yeah.
It's either 11 points, I think it's 11 points at her base and 7 points in her crown. So she is 7-11.
11, yeah.
Right, which includes the pyramid itself.
Yeah, another one about Manhattan and the esoteric phallic aspects. The only major industry that Manhattan ever had that didn't involve money or entertainment, meat process. The whole west side of Manhattan, nearly all the way from the Bronx down to past Canal Street at one time, was all meat warehouses on the west side. So that's another aspect, you know, meat. And also the building that
them.
The... Yeah, and
sorry,
the site that
them.
The... Yeah, and the... The site that the United Nations built on the east side was originally a slaughterhouse.
Mm.
I never heard that before.
They call the like the Lower West Side. They call that all the meat packing district.
The meat packing day. And packing meat
right.
to you is sex.
Packing meat, exactly.
Yeah. That's I'm sorry. The packing industry. Yeah.
Hey, isn't it all too perfect that Ghostbusters itself starts out with the Columbia, goddess that is obviously the statue.
The Statue of Liberty has Columbia.
I mean, pointing out something obvious there, but it's just too perfect when you're watching it. It's just like really.
Yeah.
And at the beginning as well, it always kind of struck me that they're in the library, this kind of receptacle of knowledge, and there's this old woman, and actually at the very beginning it's the librarian who gets scared when everything kind of flips out, but it, as the film begins and they go into this library to check it out, The entity that they envisage is again an old woman, and this kind of naivety there about them, because it was almost like they were afraid of women, and you know, they're going, oh, go on, you go and speak to her.
Ghostbusters is a fucked up film, isn't it?
It really is.
No, I've never given it this much thought.
I'm just going to point out a synchronicity to you, because I think it actually, in a weird sort of way, through a synchronicity, it confirms your point about Bill Murray being the baby. I did for 42 minutes last week. They had on a guest, Dr. James Hollis. And if you look, if anyone wants to go to thesyncbook.com/42minutes, episode 113, there's an image you're going to see of a family lineage. It's like an old woman on the left and a baby on the right. And we were trying to decide between using an image of the old woman in the library from the beginning of Ghostbusters or using this image. And so at some point, what I was going to try and do was I overlaid them at 50% transparency. So you see the three Ghostbusters standing in the library with this image of the family over it. And it was where Bill Murray was, is where baby was.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's funny, I always kind of saw him initially as like a sort of Crowley-esque character. He's there kind of...
his sex rituals.
Yeah, he's wandered off with the girls. He's not bothered. He just wants to, you know, do sexy stuff.
Yeah.
His name is Peter, which is right. Like Peter is the rock, but it's also a phallic reference. And his last name is Venkman or Wankman. Peter the Wank.
So, what is that expression he says in the film? I guess it's American pop culture line, but I never got it. I never understood what he meant. Like, there's always room for pudding, or there's always room for jello or something.
I believe it was a commercial we had here. There's like it was a jello commercial, and they said there's always room for jello.
It's Miller time.
It's Miller time. Right. That just came to my mind. Yeah.
Yeah, Sly
Commercial. Yeah, I wonder, is there any, would there be any kind of esoteric aspect to that?
It's a jello. It could be. Yeah. You can see through it.
Jello is boiled cows. I'm just trying to meatpacking. I'm just wondering.
You know that beer was the drink of the Egyptians. You know, they didn't drink water.
Exactly. You know? There you go. Yeah.
And he's a... in most of his films, he does sort of acknowledge the audience, doesn't he? He sort of occasionally looks at the audience like he's in...
And he does sides, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. And he's done some quite interesting films, like, you know, obviously Groundhog Day, Scrooge. But he's always that... There's a dichotomy going on, isn't there, in his psyche.
In Caddyshack, he's the crazy groundskeeper who fashions animals out of Semtex explosives and blows them.
And he makes potting greens out of dope, doesn't he, out of marijuana?
Yeah.
You just pull yourself a bit of the green.
We've gone into What About Bob quite a bit, and relating the child who also appears in Hook, which is like the Toddy is not the star reference throughout it, and like Run Home Jack over and over again. Steve Wilner had gone into that quite a bit at one point. Run Home Jack being an Osiris reference, I believe. I wouldn't do it justice.
So the reason Jack considered Osiris reference is because Osiris is this vegetable-based green man. And in England and throughout Europe, there's the idea of the Green Man, which is a like through a Beltane festival or something like that. You have
it's actually a Christian symbol.
Yeah, it's pan-based, isn't it?
Yeah, they call him either Jack Wood or the Green Man. So there's this idea that Jack that Jack, and that, and in this, I feel like I should point out that one of the famous taglines for another Bill Murray movie, Stripes, is him saying, "That's a fact, Jack."
Fat Jack, yeah. did you complete your basic? That's a fact, Jack. Yeah.
There's an abbey. There's the ruins of an old abbey here, an old Cistercian abbey. And on one side they have the Green Man up on top of the tower, and on the other side they have the Sheila and the Gig, both directly facing each other. And it's like in a so-called Christian building, and it's purely, you know, it's totally a sort of an esoteric idea of like the you know, and it's on top of the tower of the monastery.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, the esoteric current of especially European Christianity seems so obvious, but then it's a question of, is it, it's obviously Christianity trying to incorporate the more pagan symbols as a way to almost co-opt or gain followers into new enterprise, their religion. Yeah. And at the same time,
to offend them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like what ends up happening though, is they try and co-opt these symbols or these archetypes. And yet I feel like the archetypes almost like, I don't mean this in a negative way. I'm going to say like a virus. I don't mean that in a negative way necessarily, is that by trying to take it into the system and trying to co-opt or control these things, archetypes end up taking control of that church system.
Huh.
If that makes sense.
You know, if we look at the 60s and say that the mystic movement, the psychedelic movement, if all of that was structured to keep people who would join into that from becoming focused on what the powers that be do not want them focused on, it didn't work.